Hello, everybody. Zach Valenti jumping in before the episode begins with a quick trigger warning. Our second story today deals with more heavy subject matter than we typically do, cyber stalking in particular. If that's something you do not want to hear, no worries. Go ahead and skip that story. The time codes for the back half will be in the show notes, so you can skip to that third segment. And if you do feel like listening to it, we do elide a great deal of the article itself. And so just heads up on clicking through for maybe more graphic details than you want. And with that, here's the show. This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
I am your first Bad Ideas host. My name is Gabriel Urbina.
I am the second Bad Ideas host. My name is Sarah Shackett.
And lucky number three, Zach Valenti, coming at you.
And we're back. We're back to sort of a full show where we do
no more witches
stories. No more witches.
Well, maybe some witches.
Maybe some witches.
Yeah. Okay.
No exclusively witches.
That's right. But no, after taking last week off to kind of promote Zero Hours, the new show that we did, which if you have not listened to yet, you should check it out. It is in all places that quality podcasts are sold or give it away for
distributed
free.
Yeah.
Yes.
Definitely do that. But now we're back to our main show where we take some of the worst ideas that humanity has ever had and try to see if we can turn them into good stories in just 10 minutes. Just 10 minutes.
My head hurts already.
Oh. You're not ready.
Oh no!
Oh, shit.
I have the first bad idea this week. Link to the article for which will be in the description of this episode, and I highly recommend that you look at it because there is quite the photo.
oh boy!
Uh-huh.
Yes. So, gentlemen, this comes to us from our friends at NPR, their strange news section.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, I think, the act that's necessarily a bad idea, although it is. But it's the object of focus, let's say.
Okay.
British authorities. So mm-hmm. We're in the UK. Scramble to find.
Oh, we're not in the same country as our current president. That's not.
Oh, buddy.
This is going to come
stolen
bite me in the ass.
Solid gold toilet.
No! My own petard immediately came back
you
at me.
You set yourself up. British police have arrested a 66-year-old man in connection with the theft of a solid gold toilet from a palace west of London. The toilet, wait for it, titled America.
No!
Oh, yeah.
It is a work of art.
Yeah, baby.
By the 58-year-old Italian artist Maurizio Catalan.
Motherfucker's got our number.
See, for a moment, I thought you were just going to say, it's a work of art, period. And that was like just the end of the sentence. Like,
no.
This thing is a work of art.
Oh, perhaps. it had been installed for an exhibition at England's Blenheim Palace earlier this week. Blenheim Palace confirmed the theft in a statement posted on Twitter. Quote, we are saddened by this extraordinary event, but also relieved no one was hurt. The statement said, we are grateful to our staff and to the Thames Valley. The Valley Police for their rapid and brave reactions. The police believe a group of thieves used, quote, at least two vehicles to accomplish the task. They broke in overnight and left the scene around 4:50 a.m. local time. The toilet, worth by some estimates up to 100.25 million,
whoa.
Was connected
million
to
pounds, dollars,
dollars. Was connected Jesus. To the plumbing of the building.
What?
As a result,
holy shit.
Its removal caused extensive damage.
Fuck.
Blenheim Palace, a UNESCO World Heritage Site and the birthplace of Winston Churchill, announced Saturday that it would be closed for the day. it's not going to be the easiest thing to nick, Lord Edward Spencer Churchill, brother of the Duke of Marlborough, told the Sunday Times in August. The palace is the principal residence of the Dukes of Marlborough. Firstly, it's plumbed in. And secondly, a potential thief will have no idea who last used the toilet or what they ate. So no, I don't plan on guarding it. Perhaps he should have. America was installed as just one part of an exhibition of Catalan's work, his first solo exhibition in the UK in decades. Before it was stolen, visitors could book 3-minute appointments to use the gold toilet.
Oh my God.
Wow.
That's a
terrible idea.
So you could shit in America.
Yeah, you could. Yeah. The fact that America could actually function as a toilet was key to its message, Zach. It had previously been on display in the Guggenheim in New York, where it replaced the standard toilet in a small single unit museum.
It may be gaudy and disgusting, but yep. It works.
So you just like go into one of the bathrooms of the Guggenheim or like
when it was there, you
could open a stall and you're like, yeah, this toilet isn't clean. Let me try the next one. And you open the door and there's a solid gold toilet.
In that vein, Catalan did offer America to a more private residence than a museum, the White House. In 2017, after the Trump White House asked to borrow a Vincent van Gogh painting from the Guggenheim,
of course,
Spectre wrote back to say that the requested work was not available, but America was.
That's incredible.
Catalan has been called, quote, the court jester of the art world. In 1996, when he was unable to come up with a piece of his own for an exhibition in Amsterdam, he stole another artist's entire work and attempted to claim credit for it. He is an incredibly successful and has sold single works for more than $10 million. NPR could not immediately reach Catalan for comment on the theft of America. In 2018, when the Washington Post asked him what his work meant and why he offered it to the White House, he responded, "What's the point of our life?" he said. "Everything seems absurd until we die, and then it makes sense."
Wow. So, no, the phrasings of this article were tremendous. Yeah.
No, hats off. Jenny Gathright, I think is her name, who wrote it. Really, really lovely. So I'm going to put 10 minutes on this clock.
One quick comment before the clock starts ticking. How much did this toilet art piece...
It's over 100 million.
Like 108 million, something
no,
like
no,
that?
No, no, no. It's 1 million... 0.25. So less than that.
Less.
Oh, not 100 million.
Not 100.
No, we were both at 100 million.
Sorry.
Which
no.
That makes what I'm about to say less impactful, but still, of just kind of like, who is the art financier that when this person went up to them and were like, I want to make a solid gold toilet, 108, you know, million point eight dollars, please, or like, here's your check. And, does anybody has their number? Can you like send it to me? Because like I have some pitches for this person. Yeah. Like, come on.
Doesn't even have to be art. All right. 10 minutes on the clock. Ready, steady, go.
Okay. So the first thing that comes to mind is something about some kind of like very high class kind of gentleman thief, sort of like, you know, very Ocean's 11 kind of guy that, you know, sneaks into like the Met Gala and steals, you know, the ruby earrings off of this person and the emerald off of this other person. And Lord, whoever's wallet, sort of, you know, very like high class, super sophisticated crime. And one day they end up in a position where they need a lot of money very quickly. I don't know what it is. And his partner...
There's lots of reasons.
Bad day in Monte Carlo.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Bad day in Monte Carlo. Yeah.
Monte Carlo,
And his partner is sort of like, I have the perfect score. I have a thing that you can steal in one fell swoop. And it is going to be like the score of a lifetime. It's like, all right, what is it? What is it?
May have some shit in it, but it's not bullshit.
What? Exactly. And and then it's sort of this.
All of the jokes. But then finally it is revealed
that it is a golden toilet that is actually installed. And so it's one of these things that is like, oh, this is objectively worth a lot of money. But in order to do this, you need to learn plumbing.
Right.
You need to kind of learn all these like workman kind of, you know.
Skills.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, things that, you know, a high class gentleman thief who has probably never been out of high society.
Exactly.
Even if like he affects.
Who's never plunged his own toilet.
Exactly.
Sure. Learn how to plumb a toilet.
Which means they need to find a sketchy plumber to teach them how to uninstall the toilet.
Can we get very technical about what is the difference between a regular plumber and a sketchy plumber?
Well, one who is willing to engage in crime, obviously.
Maybe that's all I mean. Maybe they're unable to find a sketchy plumber because maybe sketchy plumber is in jail. And so they have to surreptitiously charm a very high integrity plumber who, upon finding out, you know, so I don't know, maybe this adds to the conflict. Maybe this just muddles the idea.
Are you saying that it muddies the waters, perhaps some kind of sewer blockage? That
the image is too vivid. I'm going to flush it.
Grand. Yeah, but I think that it needs to kind of be sort of in that track of kind of, you know, Bruce Wayne, Thomas Crown type person.
Sure.
That is very, very charming and has all these highly specialized skills, but has always had his mayordomo to fluff his shirts for him. Now needs to kind of learn how to uninstall a toilet.
Dirty,
exactly.
So
I think you could, even if you wanted to add like a level of competition into this, to like make it feel like there's a time crunch, the way some of the later Ocean's movies like add urgency to these thieves who have already pulled off like the perfect score. Well, actually, you have to do this in this amount of time. You could have like a Selena Kyle kind of figure who does know shit about shit.
And I think, sorry.
No, that's okay. I thought it was funny.
There was a moment where my brain was just power through. You don't need to laugh at that. No, I need to laugh at that. No, and I think that is one of those things of they are probably ex-partners, both in crime and in romance.
Indeed.
And part of the reason probably why they broke up is because she kept kind of being like, you need to kind of come down from your cloud every now and then. Like, you know,
are not like God's gift to the world of crime or whatever.
Right. And there's probably even things that are kind of like, when we went to so-and-so's wedding, you didn't do any dancing because you were like, no. It is a wedding and one does not take off any part of one's three-piece attire until the host has done this. It's like, no, like you get so caught up in the right way to do it and in appearances that you don't enjoy the good things in life.
Right. And just like, so this would be a journey of like actually learning to have fun with both the skills that this character already has and the ones that they'll acquire in preparation for this very particular crime.
Yes, exactly. I think that is the journey that like Francois or whoever this, you know, high-end thief is.
Oh gosh, what is the name of the actor in Ocean's 12 who's like their the Night Fox?
Yes, his name.
Oh, it starts with a V.
Is Vincent Cassel.
Ah.
Yes.
Yes. This is Vincent Cassel.
Yes.
Yeah.
Perfect casting.
Yes. Alternatively, his name in the film could be Pierre Delecto.
Hey!
Oh, man, that's funny.
If listeners...
That's his, like, thief artistic... That's his nom de plume.
Yeah, this is Romney's fake Twitter.
Yes, this... If listeners, if you don't know why we just left, it turns out that Senator Mitt Romney of Utah has...
Former presidential candidate.
Indeed, has a Twitter account that he uses on the side every now and again. the name of which is Pierre Delecto, which is almost a great like pseudonym.
Villainy name.
Almost.
Yeah.
The Pierre is a great start.
Yeah. It then takes a kind of a sharp turn with Delecto.
It's like, that's not French anyway.
No.
Anyway.
But yeah, but I think that that can be one of his pseudonyms. Sure. One of the pseudonyms that Francois uses over the course of the film.
Absolutely. To be fair, when asked if that's you, is this you, he said, c'est moi.
He did.
That's true.
C'est moi.
Yeah. And kind of following on this train of thought, I think that there needs to be kind of an element of Francois goes in with kind of this very probably like sophisticated plan of kind of you know,
at like 2:37, then this tripwire goes and like,
and the sewers are gonna, like the sewage is gonna get blocked because of this other thing, and my like cleaning drones are gonna, you know, like disinfect the tank. And there's probably sort of a lot of things go wrong where And then there comes to be this real like make
or
break
just
moment.
Smash and grab.
Exactly. Yeah. But in this case, it's kind of like, you know, just put your hand into it and, you know, just yeah. like stick it in and go. I don't right. care what's in there. You want this fucking golden toilet or not? You can disinfect it later.
Right.
Right. We have hand cleaning solution in the car.
Right. Yeah. And poor Francois is just like, I will wash, but I will never again be clean.
No, and of course, obviously, this has to take place like at a dinner party for the Duke of Marlborough.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Fantastic.
And sort of like surrounded by all these people that he would normally be
that he would want to impress. Yes.
Right.
Now, on his way out, does he get caught by the door with the hors d'oeuvre person and have to, with his shitty hands, prove that he is among high society?
Oh, because it would be so rude to refuse.
And there should be like a lesson when he's like showing like some, you know, the grimy plumber person, like how to mingle. Like, you never say no to an hors d'oeuvre.
Yeah, no, I think that he needs kind of a like... someone that is like the Joseph Gordon-Levitt to Leonardo DiCaprio in Inception. Kind of someone that is his, like, he's clearly been around for like a little while and he's been learning the things. And yeah, and there's probably sort of something that is kind of like, you know, early on, they're at some dinner party and this Joseph Gordon-Levitt character is like, oh no, I'm full. Out of nowhere, a hand comes up and like slaps him in his own hand. It's like, a gentleman never refuses. Right. It would be the utmost, you know, insult.
Disrespect.
Right, right.
Even if you just in like there could be a funny gag of you just like he holds it for a second and someone comes by with an empty tray and he just plops it there.
Right, right, right. Although no, we can't have that because then like the stakes are lower later on because you have to eat it.
Sure.
And he has to get offered finger food. This is so terrible. I hate it.
Well, you can.
God damn it.
Well, you have a minute 20
it was
to
just like
undo
smash cut
your
to him
disgust.
Spitting in
Yeah, give me another bottle of Listerine. Yeah, you've already gone through four. Another one.
Oh, this poor guy.
Cool. Okay, great.
So a minute and 20 seconds. What do we want to... So I guess, how does it end and what do we call it? Does he get away with this crime?
I don't think he does.
Yeah.
No.
I think his rival probably wins, but he learns kind of a very, very valuable lesson about, like, you know, coming down and, like, you know, there is a time and a place to be, you know, with your top hat and tails, but there's also kind of a time and a place to just fucking grab the
thing. I mean, I think it goes so badly and he gets wrecked.
Yeah.
But then, you know, shows up at a where the rival is at a dive bar or whatever, and they have a drink together or something like that.
And there's probably sort of something that is like when he finally catches up with her, he like, you know, really like finally like tells her what he thinks about her. There's sort of this like moment of catharsis of like, you know, all these things that for years he hasn't been saying because it wouldn't be proper.
Right.
He finally just like explodes and lets her have it. Kind of very like
But
I was gonna say like the end of John Ford's Quiet Man.
Oh yeah, The Quiet Man. That's a good one.
Yeah, movie about kind of a man that puts up with a lot and then at the end kind of
it's
finally
just a release.
Does not put up with a lot.
Yes.
But cool. Well, that's a golden story, Sarah, right?
Thank
there.
You.
Yeah.
It happened about a month ago. So just the real world. Be in the real world.
Have there been updates? Has America been found?
Also, doesn't Trump already have a golden toilet?
I'm pretty sure he does.
There's multiple, I think. Yeah, I think at least
I don't know if there's any in the White House, though.
Right. Oh, man, yeah.
Was it found?
Apparently someone was arrested. Unclear whether or not it has been found.
So America might still be out there?
I'm going to be sad if they just melted it down for the gold because
that
was more valuable than the toilet, but that's probably what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and then
dream of America.
And in Francois' story, I think it is important that it be like encrusted with jewels. Like,
oh,
it needs
to
be like even more ostentatious
than the real
thing.
Like, it's not advisable to use because the diamonds will cut your
ass. Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You have to put down a special padding.
That's right.
All right, then speaking of special precautions, we're going to take a quick break and be right back for another story after this.
Hey, y'all. We are breaking into the show, as is our wont, because we have all the power here, to let you know that we made a new podcast. If you didn't catch the preview episode that we put in the feed last week, we have a new show called Zero Hours. It is an anthology fiction podcast, 7 stories all about the ends of the world. There are multiple. We worked on it. We think it's great. Some other incredible No Bad Ideas guests like Mike Schubert and Emma Shajarko and Zach Labresco all worked on this show. We're really proud of it, and we would really love if you checked it out. Just search Zero Hours in any podcast app that you choose to use, or go to zerohourspodcast.com, where you can not only hear the show, but see the incredible art that's based on the show and read the scripts and have all sorts of fun extras to check out. And we would really love it if you rated and reviewed us on your podcast app of choice, because that will help other people discover all the cool stuff that we've made with this show. And we just want to say thank you, because it is in part the support that you all have given us on No Bad Ideas that made this new show possible. So you are in part responsible for it. You should definitely listen to what you've done. Head to zerohourspodcast.com to check it out. All right, back to No Bad Ideas.
And welcome back, everybody. Now it's my turn to inflict horrible, horrible badness.
Yeep, question mark.
This is actually pretty bad.
I'm ready for this.
I just want to take like a more serious tone that like, this is fucked up and nobody should do this. And this is some Black Mirror shit. Are you ready?
Okay.
We're ready now.
Okay, from ABC News via the Associated Press. Arrested Japanese stalker. Used pupil image reflections.
What?
What?
A man arrested on suspicion of stalking a female pop idol used the reflections of her pupils in photos she shared on social media
to know where she was,
and Google Street View to find where she lived.
Whoa!
Yes.
Fuck me.
How fucked up is that shit? Tokyo police declined comment on the declined to comment on the specifics of the investigation, but confirmed Friday that 26-year-old Hibiki Sato was arrested on September 17th on suspicion of indecent behavior in connection with stalking and causing injuries to the 20-year-old woman. The police official who spoke on condition of anonymity, as is often policy at Japanese bureaucracies, said the case was related to the reports about a stalker and pupil images. Police describe Sato as an, quote, avid fan. Public broadcaster NHK and other Japanese media reported this week that details in the woman's selfies were used to identify the train station she frequented.
Oh, my God.
They said Yikes. Sato looked at other images she shared, such as her apartment, to figure out where she lived. So I'm going to skip over some of this article, which if you want to, you can check it out. I don't necessarily recommend it. It's pretty dark. Apparently, Tokyo Shimbun, a metropolitan daily, which reported on the stalking case, warned readers even casual selfies may show surrounding buildings that will allow people to identify the location of the photos. It also said people shouldn't make the V sign with their hand, which Japanese often do in photos, because fingerprints could be stolen.
Oh my God.
Whoa.
That's wild.
Cyber stalking has been a problem for years, with criminals and perpetrators of domestic violence using hacking, clandestine activation of microphones and of cameras, and other methods to track their victims. It's unclear how prevalent the use of high-resolution photos to locate potential victims might be.
I'm never taking another selfie ever again.
Yeah, no.
With
just like
that horror, I'm going to set a clock and you guys have 10 minutes.
So, you know, the first thing that kind of comes to mind with this is I'm thinking of kind of like Tom Cruise and Minority Report, sort of those kind of like surround screens. And so there's something about a story in the near future where, you know, this is something that, say, a police investigator does of kind of, you know.
Oh, interesting. Because I've gone in a completely other direction. But tell me your idea first and then we'll circle back.
Yeah. You know, it's sort of something that is, say, like the main character is a police investigator.
Sure.
And they get something that is somebody was just kidnapped, and the kidnappers just sent this photo of the victim.
Right.
And so then this guy sort of gets it, and he goes into sort of his surround screen room, and, you know, and he sort of like puts the first photo up, and it's not enough information for the computer to kind of, you know, trace the things. And so then they're able to kind of run like some like, you know, cross references to other photos, and those fill in some more details, reverse image from reflections in the photo that fills in more things in the background. Yeah. And I'm sort of just thinking of the version in the film where you sort of begin with like mostly black screen that gets kind of gradually filled in as this guy pulls in more reference things.
Interesting.
And he is able to effectively do this and save this kidnapped victim.
Right.
And that's probably sort of the first 20 minutes of the film. But then the rest of the film is kind of about, well, should this technology exist?
And what maybe it's turned against him in some way.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. And he is sort of very gung-ho, like, hey, look, like this saves fucking lives.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we use this technology day in, day out to help people that have been kidnapped, to find murderers, to find sort of, you know, like things in a very time-sensitive manner when people's lives are at stake. But then, you know,
but if the technology is available to good guys, it's also available to bad guys.
Exactly.
And so what are the trade-offs of that?
Right. And then it sort of, this is really just turning into an alternate take on
it. It is Minority Report, pretty much.
But then something happens where he has to sort of be on the run. And then he is sort of the only person that knows how to
avoid
the system because he was the person running it for so long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See also Matthew McFadden in Spooks.
Sure.
Yeah.
What do you have, Sarah?
So you remember, like, towards the premiere of the last season of Game of Thrones, where they stashed, like, Iron Thrones in specific locations. One of them was in Queens.
I do not remember this.
And they posted pictures of the Iron Throne in, like, natural environments. Like, one was in snow, and one was in, like, a forest, and one was in, like, on a mountaintop or whatever. And they were like, whoever gets there first gets a prize, kind of a thing.
Interesting.
And people did all kinds of crazy stuff to like the angle of the sun at a particular moment to figure out the longitude and the latitude of the location. Like they sort of cross-referenced all sorts of Google photos. There were like whole Reddit threads about finding these Iron Thrones.
Wow, I've never heard
of
this.
Yeah, no, this was a promotional thing they did for the start of
season eight.
Yeah. I don't actually remember how I knew about it. And there's actually like another, do you remember the Shia LaBeouf like crazy art piece in front of Museum of the Moving Image? Like it got vandalized because of course it did. And so they moved it like into the middle of a field, like in Tennessee, but people who wanted to vandalize it found it using just like the
vandalize
imagery
him?
Of it. Art, the like art piece or whatever, which was like a flag raised in the middle of a field or whatever. But they used sort of the information in just a picture in order to find it. And so this is a thing apparently. And so what I think you could do is have like either a contest or some sort of mystery where someone keeps posting pictures of where they are and you have an investigator type person or maybe just like a cool hacker Mr. Robot kind of person who can figure this out, but the challenge is to figure it out quickly enough to actually catch up to whoever's in the place.
Third option Fritz Lang's M.
Oh, Lord. Sure. Yeah, let's do that.
There's someone that is a murderer.
Yeah.
And but it is a serial killer or something like that.
Right.
And it is someone that is very, very, that's kind of caught the imagination and has become kind of, you know, someone that is widely, widely despised, even more than most criminals are. And something comes up where little bit of like the case file evidence leaks. And so then Reddit and kind of the mob starts to use these technologies to try to find them before
and the police,
have
to find them first.
Exactly.
And then it's a race.
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly.
I love this idea because if you have not seen Fritz Lang's M, which you absolutely should, it's an incredible movie. The conceit of it is that there's this serial killer and both the underworld and the police are trying to find this person at the same time.
Right.
And because I don't know, unfortunately, that you could do that story anymore.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Let's not forget
Elsie Beckman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The way it opens is absolutely heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking. But I think that you would need to sort of do something like that with this, of kind of the police having more manpower and kind of more immediate on the scene resources.
But Reddit has Reddit.
Reddit has Reddit, and Reddit has sort of these technologies. Right. That,
And I think ultimately, like,
people in basements with high speed internet.
Yeah.
In their lives.
Yeah.
And people distributed across all time zones. So the work can continue 24 hours a day.
No, and it's like there's that episode in the most recent season of Black Mirror where Andrew Scott takes somebody hostage.
Yeah.
And the police are kind of working with them. But then the social media company that runs Facebook in that alternate universe gets involved. And all of a sudden, they know more things than the police.
Right.
Because they just kind of have access to
these
things.
Because they have the God view.
Exactly. Right. And the police are kind of going like, how the hell do you know all these things? Like, we're... You know, we have like this guy surrounded in this car. We're, you know, and we have like men working.
And like, he's been on our platform since he was 14 years
exactly.
old.
Exactly. Yeah. And you sort of like have all these things of like the Redditors will hack the Facebook network and they
exactly.
will hack sort of, you know, Twitter and get all these things.
And of
and
course,
they will
like
do things like kind of this like retinal eye reversal
yes.
that maybe the police will go, this is a violation of civil liberties.
Like, this should not be. And also, like, I think it would be important in this scenario to at least some faction of Reddit to get it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And for that to come out publicly, and now you have someone else in danger.
Right. Like, Reddit sends everyone after one guy. That guy probably dies because the crowd mauls him.
2 minute, 20 second warning.
Thank you very much. But then the next day, another person turns up dead.
Right.
And it's sort of that moment of like, oh, yes, that wasn't the killer.
And then that's maybe when the people who are able to do sort of the really intense image location searches offer their services to the police instead or something
sure.
like that.
Or alternatively, there then becomes kind of an element of people start to use this manhunt to settle personal scores.
Right.
You know, Reddit user, you know, R4Revenge49 really has something against this one guy who fucked him over.
Right.
And so he posts a couple of things that would lead people to think that that was that guy. And that just spirals out of control or something like that.
Yeah.
Wow. You like Photoshop geolocation information on top of the iris of the person.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
And you know, and some of the smarter people are able to look at it and kind of go, this is obviously a fake. But then some of the people that aren't kind of perspicacious.
Yeah. 14, you know, 15 year old kids.
They
who
share,
are caught up in
you know,
it.
share, spread it to everyone. Look, it's that guy. And then the inevitable happens.
What makes this interesting is, and I don't know that we have time to get into it, is how we would organize like the Reddit, Twitter, social media mob, like how many characters this entails and like how
right.
how you would actually like depict an online mob in action. Is a fascinating challenge that I don't have a good answer to.
I think you need to very much be telling this from the perspective of the cops.
Hmm.
And you need to be doing things like, you know, I can sort of imagine scenes kind of something out of like BBC's Sherlock, where you have kind of the two main cop characters. And one of them is sort of going, you know, well, for God's sakes, like, you know, how many of these people are there? And the other cop characters kind of going like, well, you know, like, think about it for a moment. And all of a sudden, they're kind of saying like a university classroom lecture.
Sure.
And it's like, you know, like, imagine that, like, you know, this guy hears about it, tells this guy. And suddenly there's like four people sitting in the like seats.
Right.
But then, you know, like they tell sort of like other people. And now all of a sudden, like the room is full. And then, you know, but then it's sort of looking, but then like you think about like a cross plot from platform. And then all of a sudden they're in a bigger lecture hall. Like, you know, you sort of have to do kind of like impressionistic illustrations of it, I think.
What I agree. And if it's told from the perspective of the cops, that makes a lot of sense. That does ultimately weight the perspective of this against like any social media sleuthing, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but it's just a choice.
Yeah.
And that's time.
Well, on that choice.
On that choice.
Yeah. On that choice. Wow. This
that's
is
bonkers. Oh, man.
This is not only a bad idea, but like genuinely terrifying.
Yeah.
Like, wow. No.
Yeah, I'm horrified how much of my life is on Instagram, YouTube, etc. goes to take it all down.
Yeah, no, like there's sort of like moments where I'm just kind of like, unfortunately, I don't think that I do a lot of kind of documentation of my immediate area.
Yeah.
I tend to take photos when I'm far away places, but still, that's a very, very kind of like chilling thought all of a sudden. Yeah.
Well, on that chilling
thought, yeah, let's go take chill a for a moment.
And be right back.
All right, everybody, welcome back to No Bad Ideas. And this week, we're going to do something ever so slightly different. Instead of doing another bad idea, we're going to do a little bit of a throwback Monday.
Yeah.
And do sort of like one of our old rap sessions where we talk about kind of what's going on in our creative life and about some of the work that we've been up to.
Nothing is going on in our creative lives
no.
at the moment. We're done.
That's it. Yeah. Honestly, that golden toilet was the most creative work that we've done in about 7 weeks. No, we just put out an entire fucking show. We just put out 0 hours. We put out 4.5 hours of content.
Yeah,
over
7 episodes anthology.
Over 7 centuries of stories. We wanted to just take a moment and share a little bit with you all about some thoughts that we had about how this project
why did we do this?
Masochism.
I mean, yes. I mean, it was kind of born out of like the masochistic exercise of last year.
It was.
Which was Time Bombs,
yes.
the like mini series that we put together in the space of a week, which feels like the work of other humans at this point.
You're not wrong.
It a little bit does. And I think that in turn was born out of we'd spent 4 years making Wolf 359.
Slowly but surely.
Yeah.
Painstakingly.
This gigantic journey
yeah.
of a thing.
That was just sort of an assured part of our lives that we were going to be working on this show with all of these amazing people for 4 years.
And then we spent most of 2018 beginning to build long-term things that were going to take years to come about. And we sort of went, you know what? It's probably a good idea to, you know, kind of rip the Band-Aid on doing something new and putting it out there. Good to, instead of kind of spending years on the difficult sophomore album, to just kind of quickly knock together something in the span of a week and put it out there. And I think that we got sort of a lot about out of that experience
yeah.
of,
oh, we can still do this. Oh, we still like to do this.
Yes,
yeah.
Indeed. But then for this year, we kind of thought that we would combine that with, well, can we do something that tells more stories and lets us kind of work with more people that we were interested
right.
in collaborating with? Why an anthology? Where did that come from?
Go ahead, Zach.
I don't have the definitive answer. I remember how long we've been talking about doing something in the spirit of Black Mirror.
Yeah. Of which we're all quite big fans
indeed.
Of.
And that the word anthology, I think, popped up in that context of like, let's make something that is maybe cohesive in a broader sense of world building, but like doesn't require us to tell the same character's story every single episode.
Yeah. And yeah. I think we sort of pulled the trigger mentally on, okay, we are actually going to do another experimental production sprint. We're not going to do it again in a week because that was terrible. Let's do it in a month. And let's look at.
And now we're never going to do it again in a month.
No, yeah. That was terrible.
Next year, maybe one in a year.
Hey, how about that? And we sort of looked at sort of all of the ideas in the bin, because if you are running a podcast network and have been tricked into listening to this episode of No Bad Ideas, then let me tell you, We have lots of ideas for podcasts.
Our bin floweth.
Yeah, so we sort of looked at like, okay, what are ideas we've had for shows that we're interested in that, you know, we keep coming back to? What are we thinking about in terms of, you know, stories that we'd like to tell? And an anthology series felt like it made sense. And then we sort of worked out, well, okay, is it the Black Mirror anthology series that we've sort of had in our drawer, or is it something slightly different? And we started working on, well, okay, what should this actually be?
And it's interesting, kind of different elements came in at a different time when we were talking about what this could be, because the original idea for an anthology series, I think, was much, much closer to Charlie Brooker's Lawn and had kind of a lot of, like, you know, technology.
We weren't on the lawn. But like,
we were kind of staring longingly at the lawn.
We had our lawn mower like ready in the back of our truck.
And then I think that like the big sort of structural breakthrough was the idea of some of it is happening in the past, some of it is happening in the present, and some of it is happening in the future. It's not just seven different ideas of what
the near future
could look like. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And the moment that it was, oh, no, this is all happening in the same continuity,
right,
just separated by a lot of years every time.
Yes, that really solidifies things, because there was, you know, there were moments of like, well, we would like to do all different kinds of stories. So is this anthology united by theme? Are they all of a particular genre?
Right. Is it all seven comedies?
Right. it totally is.
Yes.
100%.
Until it isn't.
Nay. The Exarch has some funny jokes.
Hey, yes, he does.
Sure does.
Yes. If you haven't listened to episode 6, meet the Exarch. He's a comedy character.
Indeed. So when we sort of decided that what unites them are the formal element of it being duologues, just two characters that are united in a shared continuity 99 years apart from each other. We promise the checks in the mail, Kieran Gillen. We promise. Then I think that gave us the focus to like actually go out and figure out, okay, what are these stories?
And I think that the idea of each episode is only two characters, that came about purely out of the production reality.
Keeping the budget.
We would like to pay actors. We don't have that much money to do it.
And we also don't have that much time to find people. We don't have kind of like the time
that
to coordinate.
Time to edit multi.
That's right. Or,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because again, I think our, you know, at the beginning of August, when we sort of really decided to start thinking about this, it was going to happen in a month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think the fact that you were actually the one that articulated the idea of the end of the world.
Yeah, I think that was
been
you
something
too.
That's been like, I had been kicking around this quote for years of the apocalypse isn't the end of the world. It's the end of the world as we know it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And as 2019 being 2019, following 2018, 2017, and 2016.
Right. We've just memory holed 2018. It just didn't happen.
It's gone.
Been thinking a lot about, right. Been thinking a lot about the sense of things coming to an end, but it not being the end.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, that was definitely stuck in my craw and feels good to have pulled out and thrown onto the internet in such a way.
No, and that notion of, it's not the end, it's the end of the world as we know it, I think really became the Rosetta Stone for all these
stories.
Of
the stories.
Of kind of, you know, we never wanted to have something that was just kind of, and then literally everything dies and it's just the end of it
and
all
silence.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Having sort of that a thought about like, no, these are sometimes very small apocalypses, very small changes. Is good, and it's a good sort of like way to get a different conceptual palette across these things. Yeah. Beyond that, where did sort of these stories come from? And I think that in most cases, the years came first.
No, I think what we decided when we were still sort of conceptualizing this is that we were going to have one story set in the present day, one set in 2019. We were going to space out the others in preceding or succeeding centuries. And so we figured out, well, okay, if these are 100 years apart is not as exciting because then every story is set in like 1819 or 2319. And that's not as fun. So we'll do 99 years so we can get some variety in the numbers. And then when we figured out, well, okay, we have a story set in 1920, that's when Prohibition starts. That is a epoch ending and beginning. That would be a great place to set a story. Or, you know, we have a story set in 1723. That is in sort of after the Salem witch trials have run their course, but New England is still in the grip of sort of a Puritan worldview. And there is a,
kind of the end of the great sort of like Puritan grip on American.
Yeah, it's the end. It's the end of that. And there's a comet. So like those things would work well together. So that's the definitely, I think, for the first four stories.
And then, you know, 2118 is when the wolves are going extinct. We knew that.
We knew so that. Like we've known that forever.
Our crystal ball let us. Yeah.
The future stories, I think, yeah, are just stuff we've been interested in talking about and telling. And we sort of stuck those things in, like, you know, it feels like pharmacological improvements, that's something that's 100 years away. Sure, why not? Whereas, you know, a city in the sky, that's further away.
Yeah, I think there was definitely a certain amount of, like, I know I was more nervous than excited to write anything than the two of you, but excited by the pressure of this sort of mechanism for forcing words out, which... Mm-hmm. Lord knows if they're not forced.
Right. But kind of have to scare them into being on the page.
But yeah, I think it was sort of, I had another idea I was kicking around that was just sort of like the smart answer based on the course that we had made about audio fiction. I had had some idea of like, you know, a Mad Max style world where there were two characters on the ground and like slowly it gets redefined that like one of them is actually a robot and that like he's only annoying because the first person needed to be annoyed to stay sane. And that sort of like smart answer here just didn't end up sticking in a way that like the idea that I ended up writing was just the expression of an obsession that of just, you know, some research that I've kind of fallen into of endocrine changes in the human body that, you know, may result in electricity, you know, it just sort of like kind of coalesced and was sort of pouring out the blender of my brain into this ice cube tray.
And I think it's a lot stronger for it.
Absolutely.
I think so too. I mean, it actually got written instead of an outline that never made it to script pages.
No, and I think that like the last three episodes, once we were not kind of dealing with history or current events, I think that they become much more about kind of each one of our obsessions at the moment and kind of about like the things that we are more sort of actively thinking about. That becomes kind of the new driving force instead of kind of historical contexts.
Although, don't get me wrong, love a good historical context.
Yeah, oh, no. Historical context. Great.
Right.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was more freedom as in the future stories to sort of mold what was going on to whatever we sort of wanted to get out. There wasn't like, because I'm a nerd, wrote like, okay, what is everything that happens that's important between 2019 and when episode 5 takes place?
Heaven forbid.
But like there wasn't one of the, we didn't have that document for all of us. We had like a lot of freedom to be like, well, okay, the world is going to change in this way because it makes sense for this story.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we brought them all together at the end, which was not, we didn't know how we were going to do that when we started.
No, and the final story, I think, is tied with six, probably the one that changed the most from kind of original conception.
Yeah.
Because we were originally talking about, or sort of my original pitch to you guys was about was basically about the story of the last living human who kind of
going about their day the last living human.
If you listen to Zero Hours, the last episode begins shortly after this character has actually passed away. Ooh.
No more humans.
But originally it was going to be sort of about how do you kind of prepare yourself to pass on, knowing that it is not just you passing on, but kind of your species passing on.
Yeah, that you don't get to pass on an inheritance to anyone.
Or at least not to anyone that looks like you.
Yes. Yeah. Because there was another character in that story, because they're all duologues.
Yes. And we'll maybe revisit that story some other time. So we're not going to give quite everything away. But I think that that really kind of evolved because more than anything, I think from a place of someone that we really, really respect, one of our sort of like writers colleagues who had experiences doing projects like this, really kind of challenged us to, is there any way that the last story can bring retroactively sort of all the other stories together?
Yeah.
Is there any way that
there should be some justification for why these places
And why these people?
Why these people? Why these times? And like, can you reveal that they're all related? Can you reveal that like all of their choices have led to this thing? Like, how can you tie them together?
And I remember there was sort of a day, and it was after we recorded the first episode and the third episode.
Yeah.
That we all kind of went and we got sort of like cups of tea and we sat in a park. And I sort of was like telling you guys, like, I don't know. Like, I've got this idea and that idea. Maybe it's about genetic memory and they've been able to like dig up the memories of these people and we're hearing these like quotes.
And then we all realized to be smart and just Battlestar Galactica.
Sure. But yeah, and that was sort of, I think, like one of the other couple ideas that like I'd had about sort of these are immortal beings.
Yeah.
And it was one of the ones
put a spoiler warning for Zero Hours at the top. Oh, well,
that's all right. We're not going to like, you know,
it's also not any information.
Hey, it's not like it's not like we're saying that the world ends or something like that. Right? Yeah,
totally.
Hey.
You know, and it was one of the ones that I felt the most nervous about, because I think that for me in my mind, it was really one of the ones where it was kind of, this is changing one of the baselines of this world.
Because now it is a world that has these things for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you guys were both very, very encouraging and very kind of willing to roll with the series getting a lot, lot weirder.
Well, I was willing to roll with Emma and Peter getting to do what they do.
if anyone would be revealed to be sort of, you know, like
immortal beings,
powerful, wise, immortal beings, it would be Emma and Peter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fast forward at least one nervous breakdown later, and we have a show.
I think it's multiple. More nervous breakdowns than there are people in this room. They just kind of were happening at various times and at differing speeds.
Just wait till next week. There'll be another one, I'm sure.
Oh, yes. But now the show is out and you all get to check it out. And if you haven't yet, please, please, please do check out the Zero Hours podcast. It features so many past guests on No Bad Ideas, people like Mike Schubert, like Mr. Zach Labresco,
the amateur Jarko,
plus the acting talents of Mr. Zach Valenti, along with writing talents and directing talents. Sarah and I also loosely involved. I think we got sandwiches or something.
I bought chips.
That's what it was.
And directed multiple episodes. And wrote multiple episodes.
And yes, and we would be ever, ever, ever so appreciative and ever so touched if you checked it out. And if you do like it, if you told everyone and then forced them to tell everyone that they know.
Friends, enemies, doesn't matter.
Everyone. Yes.
Peer pressure, not good, unless it's about 0 hours.
Podcast pressure,
very good.
Yes.
Well, we will be back with more podcast pressure next week.
Until then, be well and stay well.
This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Many thanks to our patrons for their partnership in making this show happen. And a special shout out to our idealist member, Rena Sarame. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at patreon.com/nobadideas. And if you love the show, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks. See you next week.
Yeah.
Yep.
Y'all ready for this?
I'm glad that's on tape.
Oh, yeah, that's yeah. going out.
Oh, Lord.
That's going out in full stereo.
Oh, great. Cool.